From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, dreams and interpretations. Here's what's happening. Colorado public health officials have confirmed now the first U.S. case of the new highly contagious strain of the coronavirus that was first discovered in Britain weeks ago, prompting a new set of lockdowns there. Let's keep our fingers crossed on this one. Despite the severe global toll of the coronavirus pandemic, the World Health Organization is warning that the outbreak is not necessarily the big one and urges the world to get serious about preparedness. Since emerging in Wuhan, COVID-19 has killed almost 1.8 million people around the world. Out of over 81 million infected in the U.S., about 335,000 people have died and over 19 million have become infected. A new study on coronavirus antibodies in Wuhan's population conducted back in mid-April suggests that the true tally of COVID-19 infections there may have been 10 times higher than the numbers that were reported by Chinese health officials. The CDC estimates that the burden of illness during the 2019-2020 season was moderate, with an estimated 38 million people sick with the flu, 18 million visits to a healthcare provider for flu, 400,000 hospitalizations for the flu, and 22,000 flu deaths in the 19-20 year. Now, we don't know what the numbers are this year, but my big question is has anybody talked with anybody about the flu this year? It's everything's COVID, COVID, COVID. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us here. John, how come people have forgotten about the flu?
Well, I mean, I think everybody wants to forget about it because, you know, COVID is running rampant right now. And you got this new case in Colorado of B117 that's, you know, the British strain that they're claiming swept, you know, southern England and has really caused lockdowns all over Europe right now. They've canceled flights. No one is allowing anyone from the UK to go anywhere at this point. But the strange thing, George, about the Colorado case is that the gentleman who's in his early 20s that was infected and is now quarantined south of Denver was not traveling, had not traveled, had not gone to the UK, had never been exposed to anybody.
That's right.
A number of very prominent molecular biologists right now and epidemiologists are suggesting that this B117 is nothing more than a variant, a mutation, a series of mutations that have taken place, and it's now, which is considered 70% more contagious, is now morphing and mutating all over the world. So, you know, we heard about the South African variety, you hear about the UK variety, but the reality is that the virus is mutating on its own into this new variety. So, fortunately, they think that the vaccines from Pfizer and from Moderna will still work, but the contagious element of this right now are swamping hospitals all around the country. I don't know about what it's like back in Missouri right now where you are, but I know that here in Los Angeles, there is no hospital space left in the ERs, in the hospitals, and in the ICUs. So if this new morphed variety is beginning to spread all around the United States, look out. We're in for, you know, this massive outbreak to continue for some time now.
Okay, thank you, John. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Bottom line, folks, though, is continue to build up your immune system. Take your vitamin D3, at least 4,000 IUs there. Take your zinc. Take your vitamin C, take a multiple vitamin with it, build up your immunity. And I also take tonic water, which has quinine in it. I've been doing that with the zinc. And you know what? Knock on wood. It's been a year, and so far, and I've been all over the place. Everything's okay. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blocked an effort to quickly pass a measure to increase direct stimulus payments from $600 to $2,000 for people, though the legislation could be voted on at a later time or date if McConnell so chooses. Now, the House passed the increase to stimulus payments on Monday with wide bipartisan support. Democratic leaders have cited President Donald Trump's criticism of the $600 payments as too low, and he's right, and the GOP president's push to increase the stimulus checks in the effort to pass the change through the Senate. Now, the $600 checks are going to go out soon, even if the Senate hasn't passed the $2,000 checks yet. So the $600 checks are in process. Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, Jeff Bezos, Amazon.com, their fortunes grew by billions during 2020 during the lockdown. That's amazing. Let's check in with Charles Koppes, author of America's Financial Reckoning Day. Well, the stimulus checks are going to go out, but only $600 until they get their act together, Charles.
Well, indeed. We talked about this last week, and Congress passed a $900 billion COVID relief bill, part of the $2.3 trillion spending bill, to provide those $600 checks. So Sunday, Trump signed this bill, and now he wants to increase it to $2,000. This hasn't happened. This was approved in the House yesterday for the to do that, like you said, but it was a fast-track vote up or down. The Senate still needs 12 votes right now, George, and they only have 6 votes. So, again, this is an up-and-down vote, right, fast-tracking. So they're going to have to work on that. Today, Trump had tweeted that unless Republicans have a death wish, this is the right thing to do. In other words, Republicans now need to spend like Democrats. And both Republican senators in Georgia have voted for this increase. So tonight, I think the Treasury has confirmed that direct payments and checks will probably start going out tomorrow, as soon as tomorrow.
For $600.
Well, $600, and then they'll have to work on that. But, you know, George, the real death wish is for our country. We're at a tipping point, a reckoning day, as I like to call it. This is $28 trillion, and that is 12 zeros, people. That is unsustainable. Someone once said that all debt is eventually paid back. It's either through default or inflation. Neither one are good. And I think we're facing both, but it's why you have a risk aversion into gold and silver right now. And even Bitcoin is $28,000. It's up 300% this year.
It's crazy.
600% since March. But this is what gold and silver should be doing, but the powers that should not be are suppressing that index. I write about this in my newsletter. I think we're going to have a big year in 2021. People want to check out the newsletter or contact me, go to idpconsultinggroup.com, and I wish you and all your listeners a safe new year.
And we're starting the new year. We're going to start the new year, Chuck, more of the same, though, aren't we?
Well, I don't see any reversing policy in Washington. It's just, they feel like they have to do something, and we respond and do this. And you want to help people, but, $1.4 trillion of that is all pork. They spent months putting all their K Street lobbyist money spending in there, and you see it all over the Internet. I mean, this is how Congress works. And, I hope we have a safe year, an informed year. You're doing your part out there. I appreciate it. And we'll talk about it more next week.
Okay, you got it. We'll talk to you next year, actually, to be accurate. In a moment, we're going to talk about biohacking your brain, how to boost cognitive health, performance, and power. Dr. Kristen Willemeyer back with us on Coast to Coast, and she is next. Don't go away. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Dr. Kristen Willemeyer with us. She was last on with us 3 years ago, conducted her graduate research in the Laboratory of Neurophysiology and Psychology at the University of California, Los Angeles, and the Laboratory of the Neurogenetics at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. She received an MS degree in psychological science and neurobiology and a PhD in neurobiology from the University of California, LA. She has a postdoctoral scientist in the Department of Neurology at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, where she continues her work in the field of neurodegenerative disease. Dr. Christian Willemeyer, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Thank you so much, George. It's such a pleasure to be on with you this evening. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you coping in L.A. with the shutdowns and everything else?
I'm telling you, it is intense out here. I mean, as you heard, you know, our hospitals are at maximal capacity. We are all on lockdown, and I have a feeling this is going to continue for the next month or two. And, you know, I'm coping because I've pretty much been on lockdown since since March. But it's pretty intense out here.
This interview is probably the highlight of your month, right?
I'm so excited. I'll tell you, this is the latest that I've stayed up in quite some time. And I have my little rescue dog, Oscar, with me on my lap, so he's excited to join as well.
Oscar, love that. His name of my CPA, Oscar. He'll be glad to know that. Well, I got to tell you, these are tense times. I know I'm broadcasting out of St. Louis. I left L.A. a few months ago because of the shutdown, and it's not getting any better at all. But I'm a believer that we need to open things up. I don't know where you stand on that.
Well, first of all, can I just applaud you for how well you are taking care of your health? Now, I know you're doing the vitamin D, the vitamin C, the zinc daily, and
I've added quinine water to it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's helped you?
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that's part of the hydrochloric which is used as an anti-malaria drug that a lot of people swear by fighting COVID.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, I follow a similar protocol that you do. I'm a big believer in using nutritional supplements to help support the brain and body, and those are part of sort of my staple regimen of supplements. So I think that's a really smart strategy, especially now when we're in COVID. It's at least something that we can take responsibility for our own health, and I think that's something everybody can do. So I really applaud you for that.
Well, and speaking of our own health, during this particular time with the lockdowns, there are more people with anxiety, divorces, suicides, depression, than I have ever seen. How about you?
I agree with you. You know, pre-pandemic, you know, anxiety levels, there were 40 million Americans in the United States that struggled with various forms of anxiety, OCD, PTSD, and 17 million Americans were struggling with depression. Now that we are in the pandemic, those numbers have skyrocketed. And truth be told, I mean, we don't even know how long the psychological tail is going to go, because right now we don't even know when we're going to get out of COVID. At this point, you know, I heard on the news this evening that even with vaccines, we won't really be able to have access to them, you know, throughout the next year, maybe even into 2022. So I feel like we're going to have to get ready for another year of sort of laying low and staying indoors. At least that's happening here in Los Angeles. I know other areas of the country, the United States, it's not as bad as it is here.
In your neck of the woods several months ago, an individual whose grandfather years ago left him tens of millions of dollars in inheritance money took a dive out of his Beverly Hills apartment and killed himself, with the reason being he was lonely because of COVID. And this was months ago before it really even hit it big.
Oh,
but he got that depressed, tens of millions of dollars, and he's still depressed.
You know, it's funny. There was a paper that was published in Nature Neuroscience just this past month talking about the impact of social isolation on the brain. I mean, we've really never had this level of social isolation, this prolonged social isolation before, and it's really impacting people in significant ways.
Well, I've got to tell you, Kristen, two things have kept my sanity going, and I'm going to be really honest
here.
One is this program. I mean, I look forward to doing it every night, and it gives me that opportunity to do things and to interact with people and stuff. And it's helped me, and I'm sure it's helped a lot of our listeners as well, to be able to listen, participate in stuff. And the other one, as strange as it might seem, is going to the grocery store. You put your mask on, you're allowed in, and you see humans walking around.
You know what? I'm so envious of you. I haven't been in a grocery store since March. I order everything from Instacart. So I've really been on the full lockdown here in Los Angeles. And so really having your community and you connecting with the people in your community who love you, I think that's a really great strategy to kind of keep you going through this pandemic.
I mean, I find myself wandering down aisles, and I don't even need anything. I just, pushing my little cart, doing my thing.
Well, you can sing along to the music. You know how in the grocery store they're always playing the music in the background.
Yeah, what's interesting is the mood people are in the grocery stores. They're in pretty good moods. I haven't seen anybody lose their temper or fight or argue or anything like that. But outside, people are getting uptight these days.
Well, do you remember, at the beginning of the pandemic when we were all rushing into the grocery store for food because we didn't think there was going to be enough?
Yep. Oh, yeah. So, toilet paper, all that stuff.
Oh, my God. We couldn't get toilet paper for months.
It's crazy. Crazy. Yeah. Well, tell us how you wrote the book, Biohack Your Brain. Tell us about that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show to talk about the book. So there were sort of several reasons why I wrote this book. Back in 2009, I was actually the director of research for an outpatient mental health facility called the Amen Clinics. They're nationally recognized. And back in 2009, we ran at the time what was one of the world's largest brain imaging studies in living professional football players. And the goal was just to see what happens to the brains of these athletes who play collision-based sports, and wanting to understand more about what happens to their long-term brain function. Interestingly, after we started doing that work, like in the first 15 players, we realized the damage was so significant that we wanted to offer them the ability to participate in a brain rehabilitation protocol. And that protocol was very simple dietary and lifestyle modifications. You know, at that time, we were working with 100 players, and it's very expensive to run a clinical trial when you're doing everything from neuropsychiatric assessments, neurocognitive assessments, and two forms of imaging. And what we found was by following these very simple dietary and lifestyle modifications over the course of 6 months, when we had them come back and rescan their brains, we were able to make very tangible, measurable changes in brain function that are visible on neuroimaging. So why is that important? When we can change blood flow and activity patterns in the brain that help the brain to be more stable, and with the blood flow, we want to have more oxygen to the brain because that's what keeps your neurons and cells alive. When these changes are sustainable long-term, that's what's going to help prevent cognitive aging. So
are people's brains getting distorted during this COVID episode?
Well, absolutely.
So I thought so.
If we're going to talk about COVID, we know that COVID has neurological implications. So everybody, initially thinks of it as a respiratory system, but it also impacts the gastrointestinal system and the neurological system. So we know that SARS-CoV-2 is binding to receptors in the nasal epithelium, which is why we see people have loss of sense of smell. We see that it binds to receptors in the oral mucosa, so people have loss of sense of taste. It's binding to receptors on the vascular endothelium, which is why, you're seeing the inflammatory response and the inflammatory cytokines, which can then go and disrupt the blood-brain barrier. So that's how we're thinking that it's getting into the brain. And autopsies of people who have passed away with COVID, they found that it's binding to receptors in the frontal lobe. So we know that there are these neurological consequences, and at this point, we don't even know, again, how long these are going to last. So we're thinking about wanting to take care of our brain health at this time. There's the neurological consequences, and then there's the psychological consequences. Like you were saying before, we're all under a lot of stress and anxiety, and depression levels are up, and suicide levels are up. So the two things combined really make it important for people to kind of take another look at how they're living their life, right? What kind of things can they do daily to take the best care of their brain health? And really, that was one of the, you know, I guess it's one of the gifts, having written this book. It was fully written before COVID was, you know, underway.
It was good timing. Kristen, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about the brain memory. Why do people remember more than others and some don't? And we'll get into that. Kristen's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. She's also on Twitter and Instagram. The name of her book is Biohack Your Brain. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will take your calls next hour with Dr. Kristen Willemeyer as we talk about Biohack Your Brain. Fascinating book, by the way, and you get ready for your phone calls. It's just right around the corner. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Dr. Kristen Willemeyer with us, and we're talking about her book that has just come out called Biohack Your Brain. Kristen, let's talk about memory in the brain for a moment. What creates memory anyway?
What a great question. What creates memory? So when we learn things during the day, it goes into our short-term memory. And when we sleep at night, this is why sleep is so important, those short-term memories get consolidated and encoded into long-term memories and then get stored throughout the brain. So there's a really important sort of key area of the brain called the hippocampus. The hippocampus is the area of the brain that is essential to encoding those memories. So when we think about wanting to protect our brain and protect our cognitive health, you're going to hear a lot of people talk about wanting to protect the hippocampus and to keep the volume of the hippocampus large as we age.
Why do some people have great memories, other people don't? And here's an example. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was somebody that I know that, you know, he was talking about something and he said, I got to look it up on the internet. And 2 minutes later, he forgot what he was going to look up on the internet. How does that happen? And I think it's probably happened to all of us at some point in our lives.
Well, first I would say, you know, is he distracted? Like at this point in time, you know, we're all going through COVID and we're stressed and we have a lot of stress. You're not always focused. So I think people who are able to have great attention spans and are able to have sustained attention tend to have better memories. But memory is so complex. So there's so many factors that can impact it. For example, if you have diabetes, midlife hypertension, obesity, if you smoke, if you struggle with depression, if you're cognitively inactive, so if you just don't do stimulating activities to keep the brain sharp, and if you don't move or exercise, all of those things can lead to decrements in our memory. So,
interesting.
Yeah, they're all important. I know you talk about this a lot on your show with pharmacist Ben, and you know, and the doc. So I think for people, if they really want to keep their memory sharp, you know, it's important. You know, if you have diabetes, you know, 29 million people have diabetes, 85 million pre-diabetes. You got to get the diabetes treated because literally this is starving the brain of nutrients.
Well, how many people, for example, are introduced to somebody and they forget their name, you know, the minute they walk away?
Oh, do you want a little trick on how to remember somebody's name?
Yeah, that would be great.
So what's interesting about that is if you're not focused, like when you meet somebody, if you're not what we would say in present time consciousness, really focused on that person, you know, it's fleeting, right? It goes into your short-term memory and goes right out
you,
the door.
You hear their voice, but you're not really registering.
Correct. So what you have to do is play a little game. So, for example, I live in a high-rise here in Century City, and there's 400 people that live in the building. And so there's a lot of people, a lot of names to know. When I go out and walk Oscar, there's a couple, Rich and Diane. When I first met Rich, the first thing I thought of when I saw him was a bag of money. I know that sounds crazy, but it's like, okay, that's I'm going to remember Rich. And then when I see Diane, I think of Princess Diana. Every time I see them, I can just go to the memory. So what I do is create some sort of visual in my mind because the mind is really all about visual imagery. So if when you meet somebody, you can sort of create a visual image that associates that name with that vision. You will remember it.
Nothing impresses a person more than when you meet them the second time and you remember who they are.
You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right.
And people
right.
know if you know their name.
They do.
I mean, because most of the time, if somebody comes up and you don't remember their name, it's, hey, how are you? Good to see you again. But if you know their name, it's, hey, Bill, good to see you again.
Well, that actually shows that you care, you're focused. I mean, how many people are attentive listeners? Not a lot of people. So it shows that somebody actually cares to remember their name. And if you use that little trick and you associate that person with either, again, a vision, a sort of a visual with that. So if somebody met me, Kristen, and wanted to remember my name, they could think of Christmas, crystals, like anything that has the Chris in it.
I've got a little 15-month great-grandchild.
Okay.
Her name's Mila. And she is as sharp as a tack. I can already tell the girl's going to be brilliant. I mean, she's doing things at that age that is amazing. You can watch her little brain work.
You're watching the brain grow. Yeah, I know it's fun.
But when they're babies at about that age, how good is their brain for memory and things like that?
Well, so the brain is going through this process of development, rapid growth from birth all the way to age 25. And the most accelerated period of growth is literally between ages 0 and 5. So, you're watching the development of this little mind, right? Exploring the environment and taking on all this information. And they're taking in information. It's like this, the brain is a sensory processing organ. So it's taking in everything in its environment and going into that, not just the conscious mind, but the subconscious mind.
Tell me about dementia. Exactly what is it? What causes it?
Oh, you want to know about dementia. That's a good topic.
Wait a minute. I just forgot. What did I just ask? No, I'm kidding.
dementia is talking about what happens when you are losing memory. It's funny, as I'm talking to you, Oscar just distracted me.
I thought something was going on in that place.
Yes, my little child here.
Put him on the air with us. Does he bark?
He does. He's actually being quite quiet. So dementia is just a general term for loss of memory, language issues, or problem solving that can interfere with your quality of life. So with Alzheimer's disease, usually 60% of those cases are related to dementia.
Well, now, what'll kill you, dementia or Alzheimer's?
Well, they don't kill you, per se.
They don't shut your systems down or anything like that?
Well, as you age, they can. I know you had pharmacist Ben on talking about what happens as people age and have dementia. Sometimes they stop eating.
Mm-hmm.
And those things can actually lead to people passing away.
What are some of your favorite foods to kind of prevent those things happening?
So one of my favorite foods are blueberries. So berries are, any kind of berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, are essential to protecting brain health. They are loaded with flavonoids, which can actually cross the blood-brain barrier and protect your neurons from dying. So that's really important.
Yeah. So blackberries, raspberries, all the same?
Blackberries, raspberries, they all have a really high antioxidant potential. So
interesting.
That helps to protect the cells of your brain. And Harvard did a fascinating longitudinal study over the course of 20 years in 16,000 people showing that people who consumed blueberries at least 3 times a week had slower cognitive aging by as much as 2.5 years.
So, wow, that's a lot when you get up there in age.
You know, it's really impressive. So just thinking about the daily habits that you have, consuming the berries is really important in protecting your cognitive health.
I am convinced, Kristen, that people who work longer and don't retire have more sharper brains and live longer than people who retire. Am I right?
Absolutely. So working is a cognitively stimulating activity. You know, whether you're reading, you know, having meetings with people, just keeping yourself mentally challenged is really important for brain growth. So there's something called neuroplasticity, which is when the brain is making new connections. So when you're learning through work, you're stimulating neuroplasticity. And then there's also neurogenesis, when you're growing new brain cells, particularly in that region we talked about called the hippocampus, which is important for learning and memory. So that's why working is so important, because it stimulates both the neuroplasticity and the neurogenesis.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to bring in Tom for a second, our producer. And this is what I told him years ago. This is how I want to go. I don't want to retire. When I first got this job almost 19 years ago, I figured I'm going to retire around December 21st, 2012, the Mayan calendar end date. It's a perfect time to go out. Once I got to that date and I'm still kicking along, I'm going, I'm not going to retire. I'm having too much fun. I like this. But I told Tom how it's going to be. So I want you to imagine for a second, Kristen, we're in a commercial break, right?
Yes.
And you're hearing a commercial, as you just did. And then we come out of the commercial to Tom. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I first have to say that I'm glad that you think you're going before me. No offense. But it's going to depend on the situation and how you go. But basically, I'm going to run in there and I'm going to go, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to explain what happened to George, whether he fell or what he did. And I'm going to, if we're depending on the timing, if we're in the middle of a segment, I'll probably take it to the break, or else we'll just go straight to a commercial, probably to a commercial, because we're all going to be bawling and calling 911 and that so forth. But we do have a little plan, I must say.
You guys have actually planned this.
We planned this. This is the way I want to go.
You're going to continue working until your last breath?
Yep, that's right.
George, we haven't planned if I go, though.
No, that's going to be sad. That's going to be sad for me, because you've been my right hand for all these years.
Yeah, you'll be celebrating.
Your replacement is outside the door right
now.
Yeah,
exactly. Producers are a dime a dozen. Thanks.
All right, thanks. Yeah, but that's the plan. But I'm convinced. My father retired from the Ford Motor Company, was a financial analyst at 60. They had a program called 60 and Out, and he wanted early retirement. He'd still got a portion of his salary. But I saw him kind of, he lived until he was 88.
Wow.
But I saw him wither away when he retired, because he didn't do much. You know, he loved his family, and that was what he did.
Right.
But in terms of activity and keeping busy, and he wasn't into golfing or sports or anything like that, I saw him for 28 years just kind of there.
Well,
and I don't want that to happen
purpose.
To me.
Yeah, it gives us a sense of purpose. Like you said, during coronavirus, like, this is the one thing that really brings you joy. You love coming into work, connecting with your audience, teaching people new things. So I think you should keep going.
What are three popular myths about the brain that you want to debunk?
Oh, I love the brain myth question. So first of all, and I know I've been talking about the hippocampus a lot. So one common myth is that the adult brain cannot grow new brain cells. But the truth is that we can grow new brain cells from adolescence into adulthood.
They used to tell us that if you had a glass of wine or a glass of beer, it would kill your brain cells.
Right. Well, it will short-circuit the connections between them, and it's not so great for your liver. But the brain can grow new brain cells, again, in that area of the brain I was talking about called the hippocampus. And why is that so important? Because this is the region of the brain where we take our short-term memories that we learn during the day, consolidate them into the long-term memories that we can keep for a lifetime. So we want to make sure that we protect that region of the brain. But I think what's really exciting for people is to understand that we can grow new brain cells as we age.
All right, that's one myth. What's another?
So another myth, I think you'll appreciate this, is that multitasking. So people think multitasking is a way for the brain to be more organized and efficient.
Mm-hmm.
But truth be told, the human brain is incapable of focusing on two things at once.
Really? So, I love multitasking.
I think we all think we do, right? So multitasking.
Well, I'm doing another radio show while I'm talking to you. But nobody knows. No, I'm kidding. But I do like multitasking.
Yeah. Well, multitasking is essentially just switching our attention between two tasks. So when we, quote, multitask, we're decreasing our brain's ability to maintain focus and sustained attention, which reduces our cognitive proficiency and reaction time. And the perfect example is if we're driving and trying to text or look at our phone, right?
That's dangerous. Well, that's dangerous.
Well, that's exactly it. That's the perfect example of why we really can't multitask. If you want to focus, you have to do one thing at a time and do it well.
Well, is multitasking, though, let's say you're in a meeting, you got some people in your office, somebody else calls for something else, you talk to him, you talk to them, you can do that, can't you?
You can do that, but if you want to be, if you want your brain to be at its most proficient, you sort of focus on the singular task. So say you were trying to do some sort of work on your computer, and then, you know, a little beep goes off on your phone and you decide to look at that, you get distracted, then you go back to what you're working on the computer, but you then have to refocus. So I think the important part for people to know is if you really want to get things done, you want to improve your sustained focus and try not to do as much multitasking.
And what about the third myth?
Third myth. So, and I'm sure you've heard this, we only use 10% of our brain.
I hear this all the time.
I know, but the truth is we use all of our brain, and it is continually active when we are awake as well as when we are sleeping. And in fact, our brain works just as hard when we are asleep as when we are awake, you know, performing essential housekeeping functions like clearing abnormally folded proteins that can lead to Alzheimer's. And again, I talked about consolidating the short-term memories to long-term memories, as well as helping us to regulate our emotions. So not only do we use 100% of our brain all of the time, it is very active while we are sleeping. And I know, I think your next segment is discussing dreams.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Absolutely. I listen to a lot of Frank Sinatra songs.
Oh, I love Frank Sinatra.
This guy at his peak could remember hundreds of songs. How in the world does the brain allow you to do that?
That's because the songs are tied to emotion. So when we tie a memory to something that hits the emotional center of the brain, the amygdala, we're able to remember things. So like when you were in your 20s or, you know, 20s or 30s, don't you remember like the song that you...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I still play them sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I know you love music.
You know, music is emotion, and it's the mood.
It is the mood. I will tell you, I think you'll really appreciate this. A friend of mine sent me this incredible video of a woman who had dementia, and she was a premier ballerina. They showed her a video of her as the ballerina, and she heard the music and started doing the movement.
Ah,
it was
perfect.
So beautiful. So it just goes to show that the memories that are associated with music, because it's emotional, are the ones that are some of our strongest.
Kristen, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and take phone calls with you. Kristen's book is called Biohack Your Brain. It's available on Amazon, and we'll ask her if it's available in bookstores as well. But let's get to your calls in just a moment, and then we've got a few more questions for her as well right here on Coast to Coast. Her website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's her name, drwillemeyer.com. I won't spell it for you. We already got it linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We shall be right back.